But people think, oh, well, in the Pali Canon, you have these Hinayana teachings, and they must not really be the profound emptiness. But it's not so clear like that. You know, Buddha says, like in texts that are in Pali, that we think of as the Pali Canon, many things that seem to be pointing to the profound emptiness. And Tsongkhapa and Chandrakirti believe that, you know, even people who don't aren't bodhisattvas, you know, can realize the same profound emptiness that bodhisattvas realize. If you actually then sing, oh, well, what about that? And go back and look at some of the Pali texts, you're like, oh, this seems quite plausible that, you know, just even if you didn't even consider the Mahayana Sutras, there are things in here that could be the basis for realizing emptiness. And so Buddha, you know, taught like that if we grasp on to the name, you know, table, and think that there's a real table there or a real person, you know, here, right, then we're bound in the realm of death. Now, the person who is beyond the realm of death has seen how the naming process works, has seen into the fact that things are constituted by being designated and not because they have some objective essence on their own side. And that's a liberating insight, right? And that's how we escape the realm of death. Now, that's just a paraphrase of a passage from the Pali Canon, but there are many, many passages like that where you can see there's basically talking about a very subtle form of of dependent arising, this idea that things exist in as imputations by terms and not as something that's objectively graspable as the basis of that term. And then you can find things, many things like that in the Pali Canon. So it's saying Buddha teaches the profound emptiness. And then earlier in Buddhist history, you have people who are trying to sort out like, well, what the Buddha taught. And to because Buddha has all these different sermons and dialogues, and it's like, what, you know, how there's no Buddha didn't sit down and write a book called My System by Shakyamuni. And this is so somebody had to say, well, you know, he gave dialogue with this person this day, and then 10 years later, he came back to the same topic and gave a discourse on it. And how does this all fit together, right? And that's called the Abhidharma literature. And these Abhidharma people, when they tried to sort out all the different kinds of things that Buddha talked about and how they fit together, they created these systems. And the systems basically make lists of things called dharmas, which are like fundamental categories. When we look in meditation at the stream of experience that we think is, you know, our reality as a person, we don't like find this like graspable person as one of the core elements. Instead, we find other things. We find, you know, solidity or warmth, you know, and we find elemental sensations and elemental phenomena that are the basis upon which we then project a real person and grasp onto it. But what the Abhidharma texts don't do is say, so they say, you know, the person is empty of kind of self that's been projected on it too, because when you closely examine it, all you find is these factors, right? But they don't then say, and all the little factors are empty too, because none of them exist in and of themselves. They don't really say that, right? So then you have Nagarjuna coming along and saying, look, all the categories that you imagine, all the categories that you can think of, right, into to which experience is reducible, all of those categories are also empty. There isn't anything that you can name or point at or try to grab onto that is anything other than empty. Right, and that's the point at which Nagarjuna comes in, and then of course Aryadeva says, yeah, and that's part of the puts that in the context of the practice of the whole path. You know, here's how a bodhisattva practices, taking this understanding of emptiness as the heart of their wisdom meditation, and then following Aryadeva, you know, have all the great Madhyamaka teachers. That follow from the, you know, second to the 10th century, second to 11th century in the Indian tradition. And then, of course, Buddha, this tradition goes to Tibet. First, you know, in the 8th century, you have Shantarakshita, who's one of these Madhyamakas. And then after some difficult interlude, then in the 11th century, Atisha, another Madhyamaka, reintroduces this way of thinking into Tibet. And this second time, people really engage with it in a lot more seriously and in-depth way than they do the first time. And there's a real effort to try to say, what are these texts really saying? How do we make sense out of them? Are they saying that there's a real ultimate reality, that that you can only know non-dualistically when you're a yogi? Or are they saying that there's nothing that's real at all and therefore there's nothing to believe in or hold on to? We should just go along with what the cowherds say? And they really grapple with it and try to figure it out. And a lot of people say a lot of different things. And from Tsongkhapa's point of view, you know, I think we'd say his interpretation would be, and none of them get it right. And so they're trying really hard, but they keep going, they keep not quite getting what Chandrakirti was trying to say in his interpretation of Nagarjuna. And generally speaking, he thinks that as they go off the rails, many of them are going off the rails in a direction of nihilism. That is, they're interpreting Chandrakirti as saying that nothing exists, nothing is real, there isn't anything we can say. We just kind of go along, like, pretend with these kinds of appearances, you know, to be helpful to people. But actually, there's no kind, in the face of emptiness, there isn't any discrimination, any distinctions to be made, and therefore there are no distinctions. And this is a big difference. It's like, in the face of emptiness, there's no distinctions to be made. Well, of course, that's what the Heart Sutra says. You know, that's what Nagarjuna says. When you say, is this thing more empty than that thing? No, it's not. Everything's equally empty, right? But if you leave out that and say, oh, does that mean that there aren't any distinctions to be made at all? Well, clearly there are. you can be compassionate or not. You can try to become helpful to others or not. You can aspire to become a Buddha or not. And it's like, if you say that understanding emptiness eradicates all this, then you have a difficulty talking about what we're doing at all, you know? But you know, other people have their other ideas about how to solve that problem. But Tsongkhapa thinks that they've been unsuccessful, and that, you know, this is the purpose of what he's really achieving. That so he went. You know, you might know something about the story of his life. His teacher Rendawa tried to help him understand the view in the late 14th century. And even after a lot of effort, he still really hadn't gotten it, even though he was a master of many other things. And it was only by making direct contact with Manjushri that Manjushri essentially became his guru in terms of teaching him the final, you know, Madhyamaka view. And Manjushri is, like, according to Tsongkhapa's, you know, biography, said several different things to Tsongkhapa at different times. But one, he told him, you should rely on Chandrakirti's interpretation of Nagarjuna. Well, everybody else who relied on Chandrakirti and said Chandrakirti's the bottom line earlier in Tibet had mostly come to a very nihilistic conclusion. There isn't anything that we can say. You know, there isn't anything that exists, but we'll kind of, you could call it fictionalism. Well, let's pretend as though there were. And you know, do like this. But there really isn't anything that we can say because we're Madhyamakas, we understand that in emptiness there's nothing. Okay. And so Manjushri said, no, you should rely on Chandrakirti. Like, but then he also said, you should value conventionalities, you should protect conventional phenomena. Right? Not fall into a view or reading of Chandrakirti that destroys the world. So that was a little bit difficult to figure out how to reconcile. And actually, even after he'd gotten those instructions from Manjushri, he didn't just like, oh, now I get it, right? And he said, yeah, I still don't get it, you know? And Manjushri said, well, you know, go, you know, study, do prostrations, you know, go on retreat. You know, you have to work on this. It's not just like I can shoot some light, you know, chop with my sword or shoot some light and then you'll understand. You have to practice. You know, Tsongkhapa did so many prostrations, right, that he was like polishing the stones with his arms, you know, and doing study and retreat and meditation. And finally he understood. In 1402 he wrote the book that this is all coming from, the great treatise on the stages of the path, and laid out the philosophical understanding that we'll be talking about this weekend. Emptiness, the sheer lack of any intrinsic nature, is the final real nature of things. It's the root of all misery. We have to systematically, analytically cultivate a thought or an understanding that's opposed to that idea that is the reflexive root of cyclic existence. Analysis is needed, but at the same time, It's not that by doing this analysis, we're going to destroy and refute all conventional existence. So you have to, like, we'll have to explain, you know, how he manages to pull this off. So then, of course, you know, this leads to enormous success of the beginning of the Gelugpa order, enormous success, and then this in turn leads to the recognition and establishment of the tradition of the Dalai Lamas, and then the 14th of those Dalai Lamas, when he finds himself in a perilous situation vis-a-vis the army of the People's Republic, leaves Tibet, and when he comes over into India, he carries with him on his person his personal copy of the great treatise written by Tsongkhapa in 1402, which is like how he started his teachings at Lehi. It was a very moving moment. And he had with him the copy that he had brought out of Tibet. And then Joshua and some of the rest of us undertook a project to put this all into English as best we could, with help from Geshe Eshi Tapke and some other people. And having done that, I think a lot of people have benefited, and it's like a lot of people have read that, and people have read it and say, oh, there's a lot of help, but when I get to the part on emptiness, I can't understand what the heck it's talking about. And that wasn't really because we did such a bad job translating. It was just because it's really hard and really complicated. Tsongkhapa says you should take all of these teachings as personal instructions. But when he gets to the part on emptiness, it's kind of like personal instructions for advanced scholars. And it's like not like personal instructions for somebody who wants to know how to be more charitable or like, you know, doing more basic practice. He's sort of assuming that you know a lot in his personal instructions at that point. And so Joshua then asked me to like write something since to explain that part of the book. And that's Introduction to Emptiness. So that's how we got down to that. We have like two more sessions today. So what I'll try to do is get up through, you know, up through chapter 4 or 5 today, and then do the rest of the book tomorrow. And you can see is like I'm not exactly following line for line through the book, but I will be referring to some passages in the book and also playing off of some of the quintessential points that are in the back of the second edition, which some of you have and some of you don't have. The second edition has like a list of quintessential points chapter by chapter, and in some of the talks then I'll use those as kind of talking points to work off of. If I refer to the Great Treatise itself specifically, which I will at some point, it'd probably mostly be from volume 3, because this is all to do with the second two-thirds or second half of volume 3 and how to try to make it clearer. But in this book, Introduction to Emptiness, there are two editions, and the second edition is, I would recommend, but anyway, particularly for this, our purposes here, it has this appendix that is sort of a schematic of the kind of ideas that are in the book. Yeah. Okay, well, that's enough for this morning. We'll be back soon.
That was great.
Yeah.
So a few announcements. If people want that book, we did, it is available here. You can get it for...